This is Susan McGraw, and welcome to the WHFR Journal for this Friday, March the 8th. On this segment of the WHFR Journal, very excited to talk about a program that is near and dear to my heart. I'm actually a product of this program, in fact, very proud to say. And we're talking about the Henry Ford to Honors Program. So the new director of the Henry Ford College Honors Program is joining us today. His name is Chardon Claiborne. You've probably heard his name, and I know you've heard his voice on other segments of the journal in the past, but not necessarily in this capacity or wearing this hat. So as this sort of March and sort of pre-spring, but feels like spring season kicks in, we start thinking about what's forthcoming. And we've got the summer season ahead of us here at the college, which is usually a little bit of a lighter season for students taking classes, but then it all picks back up again in fall. We're already getting questions about that, excitedly so. So we wanted to jump in and see what's going on with the, I'm going to say new and improved, because it always should be improved, and it's certainly new, honors program. And Chardon, I'm going to welcome you to the journal. Welcome back to the airwaves here at WHFR.
Thank you, Susan, for having me. I'm really happy that you are taking the time to talk to me once again. I'm excited to be here, and yeah, let's chat.
Yay! So congratulations on being appointed as the new director of the program. And it is an esteemed entity here at the college. I think it has a long, rich history of promoting and supporting students that are excelling in whatever it is that they're working on, studying. And certainly provides an opportunity for students to have some doors open for them as they move through their experience here at Henry Ford College and beyond. I indicated I'm a product. Yes, I'm a graduate. I received an honors scholarship back when I was a student at Henry Ford College. Probably wouldn't have been able to go to college without it, frankly. So that's the first part that's like pretty helpful and incredible. But then also the extra built-in support and encouragement and frankly, requirement to be at your very best as a student. So rather than me speaking from what happened many, many years ago, in my experience, which was good, we know things have kind of ebbed and flowed since then. But at this point, you are bringing so much knowledge about this institution, about academia. You've been in so many different roles, still are, you know, here at the college. But what prompted you to sort of throw your hat in the ring for this position?
Wow. Well, thank you for the congratulations. I appreciate that. Everyone has been very kind and welcoming. It's funny to say welcoming, because as you kind of intimated, I've already been at the college for a not insubstantial number of years. I'm celebrating my 10th year at HFC, and I have been working in a learning lab prior to taking on this position for that entire time. And so when the call went out and the Honors Council was seeking applicants for this position, I honestly never thought that I would have an opportunity to do something like this. And I just kind of thought, well, why not? Why not? You know, some people have mentioned to me, hey, you might want to consider doing this. And I gave it a thought. And then when the opportunity came, I applied. And I was very gratified that the committee selected me. You know, it really does feel like a feather in my cap. And I will also say, I think I'm just so happy to get an opportunity to try something different. For the majority of my career, I worked in like student retention, academic assistance type of programs, and those types of offices. And so to be able to work with, you know, really some of the best and brightest students that we have here at Henry Ford College, it's wonderful. It's a wonderful change, and it's allowing me to think about things differently, see some different areas of the college that I'm not necessarily, you know, always had my fingers in those pies, so to speak. So it's nice to get a little bit of a different view of things. I'm working with my colleagues more closely in SOLA. That's where the honors program is housed. So that's where I've been switched over to. And it's a good change. It's a breath of fresh air. I think I feel a little reinvigorated. I don't think it's too much to say that. So yeah, that's kind of, I hope I answered the question.
You did, you did. And I love that. I love that reinvigorated. And no, it's not too much to say. In fact, it's a wonderful thing to hear, frankly, as a colleague, but also as an interviewer. So many times I hear, well, I've been doing this for 40 years, and yeah, it's what I do, and that's not a bad thing, frankly. But boy, I don't know that I could do the exact same thing for that a stretch of time that doesn't allow me some opportunity to pivot or to challenge. And certainly the world, life, students are not the same way they were 25 years ago, 30 years ago, 10 years ago, as you indicate. So I think it's important and exciting to have that opportunity to re-challenge ourselves. And I'm so glad that you're doing that. Not that the Learning Lab wasn't a challenge, because I'm sure every day, that's why students come to the
100%.
Learning Lab, yeah, because they need, they're being challenged, right? So, but I get it. I get it. In terms of your experience, Chardon, outside of Henry Ford College, I know you're no stranger to academia, the classroom, working with other people in the field of education. What are some of the things that you've done or studied that are pr preparing you? You think that you're maybe reaching back into that bag of expertise and saying, yeah, I think I can use this. I can bring this in. I understand you have your English degree and are a CMU grad. Yes.
Correct. Yeah,
Yeah. Good, good,
a proud Chippewa.
Great. Great. But what is it that you think are some of those things that maybe you haven't had to use in a while, or just didn't realize that they could translate and transfer very well into this new position as the honors director?
Oh, wow. I think about my experience in higher ed and there's that I think it's Johnny Cash, "I've Been Everywhere, Man." That's that song. I've traveled in my career. So starting out at Oakland University, as I mentioned, I worked in student retention, and that's kind of where I cut my teeth in higher ed. And I think what I've noticed is that no matter what student you're dealing with, they all have a story. And so I learned early on, I had a great supervisor at the beginning of my career. And I remember going into his office and I was very frustrated. This was like probably within my first couple of months on the job. I was working with students who were on probation. So these are students who are in jeopardy of being out of the university. And I said to him, "Why won't they listen to me? If they will just listen and do what I'm telling them to do, they'd be fine or they'd be better." And he kind of had to kind of pull me back and say, "You have to understand where they're coming from." Because he had a counseling background, which is not my background, but I've tried to adopt many of those types of the ethos of counseling, I think is very powerful. And just understanding people, trying to listen, get to know them, build that rapport. I try to approach all of my interactions with students in that way. And I think that has served me throughout my career. And I think it'll serve me here. I've already had a few students who have stopped in to chat about various things. And I'm continuing to encourage them in that way. Because the more that I know each individual student, the more I can tailor their experience to assist them. Alongside that, I know I said I worked in student retention, and that's true, but I worked in like academic support. So I'm used to working with high achieving students, because students who serve as tutors, students who serve as supplemental instruction leaders and these peer mentors, these are the high achieving students at our colleges, at our universities. They have the GPA, they have the people skills. Sometimes they might just need a little training in order to get them to that next level. But I love working with our best and brightest. And I think, again, that's a transferable skill. And I think just being in higher ed for 20 years, I've worked at Wayne State. I've worked at U of M. As I said, I did a couple of stints at Oakland University. I was able to work at the medical school there for a while. So again, working with very high achieving, motivated students. I worked at OCC. I've been inside the classroom. I've been outside the classroom. So I feel like just the length and breadth of my career has prepared me. I hesitate to say any one little thing, because I think, as you mentioned, you have these bag of tools, and sometimes you don't even know everything that's in that bag. And then the situation comes up, and you're like, "Oh, let me pull it. Oh yeah, I do have that. I do have that. That socket wrench. for this particular situation." So I'm just feeling. I'm feeling really good. I mean, it's early days, but I've been able to kind of put some things in place. One of the things that I feel very proud of is I try to be very organized. I try to be very efficient because we're all busy. Our students are busy. And so I've been trying to build in some efficiencies and some processes I think that will benefit the program and the students. So, and that's been learned over a career.
We're speaking today with Chardon Claiborne, who is the newly appointed director of the Henry Ford College Honors Program here at HFC. And as we've heard, incredibly involved in his history here at HFC and other institutions, fine institutions before. I keep thinking you're mentioning all these schools, Chardon. I'm thinking, well, boy, did they lose out by letting you go. Boy, did they lose out. Did they lose out? So all I'm going to say is I am really happy that you're here, and experience from my students that have worked with you and had the pleasure of being mentored by you is pretty incredible. You also have indicated in some print material, there was a press release about you and this new position and so on, that you have sort of a goal. And I don't know if you just said it because you were in the moment and it sounded like, I need a goal, so I'm going to share a goal. But boy, this is quite a goal. So I'm just going to read this if I can. And these are your words, Chardon Claiborne. And this is, he says, "My ultimate goal is to expand the honors program and make it into the premier honors program at a community college in all of Michigan." So nothing like setting the bar high for yourself as you get started here. What does that mean to you? What does the premier honors program at a community college mean to you? What's that vision look like?
Well, one of the main goals that I have, kind of a sub-goal of that, is nothing I do, no work that I do is divorced from, diversity, equity, inclusion, those type of those pillars, And so when I look at our honors program, we have a fantastic diverse array of students. I want it to be even more diverse though. I like it to be a bit more reflective of our, especially our racial and ethnic diversity that we have in our overall student body at HFC. And so I think that when you have a collection of students who are coming from so many different areas, our honors program should also reflect that diversity. And I think that would go a far way of reaching that goal of helping to make us a premier, honors program in the state. I've already started some outreach to my peers at other Michigan colleges. I didn't know we have like 15 or 16 honors programs in the state, which is wonderful, And one of the things that I want us to do is connect more with those programs, with those students. One of the things that we have every semester is we showcase our students the work and research that they've done with their faculty, instructors, their mentors, for their directed study. Well, I think it would be great if we're able to kind of take the cream of those students at each of these participating colleges, honors programs, and kind of maybe have a large symposium where all of them can come together, have some dialogue, share their research, and give them a taste of what it will be like at that next level, the next phase of their development when they successfully transfer. And speaking of that, I've been a little bit disheartened because even in my early time here, I've had a couple of students, few students, who have stopped the program, and there may be various reasons why a student decides to not finish the honors program, but I want that to be few and far between, the instances of that. And I think, one of my goals, again, being a premier honors program, is to have the highest completion rate of students, not only because our students are by and large going to successfully complete, whether that means a graduation or transfer, but I also, if they enter the program, I want them to finish the program and reap the benefits of that. I'd also like to see us delve more into a more consistent and comprehensive kind of experiential learning. Honors program students are required to complete a predetermined set number of volunteering or service hours. But I want it to be a little bit more, right now, I feel like it's just a little haphazard. And I like it to be more structured. And so I'm hoping in the future to work with our career services department and maybe some of our external partners to seeing how we can structure that in a way that's going to be most advantageous for our students as they, get that experience and they're able to apply it and move on to their next institution. So those are some of the things. A lot of it, honestly, is as I'm talking with my peers, I'm learning about what's working and what's not working well in their experience. And I think I'll be able to kind of pick and choose some of the things that I'm finding from their experiences, their wisdom, and maybe apply it. It's funny because it's still only February. So I've only been here for I've only been in the role for a good 2 months. So I think I'm still firming up that picture for myself of what it looks like. But yes, I do have lofty aspirations, and I think that's how we have to operate.
Well, you were not the sole candidate, of course, as in most instances, multiple people will apply to be in certain positions, and that was absolutely the case for the new honors program director position. But it seems to me that some of the things that you're talking about to support your goal, and it sounds like an expectation, which I think is wonderful, it is the quality of being organized, the quality of being collaborative, the quality of really listening to students and those things. So I don't know who the committee was that did the ultimate decision making, but I do know there were some very qualified candidates that were interested in putting their perspective onto reshaping this program. So sometimes it's the right person at the right time with the right skills, and it certainly seems that things are clicking into place as far as that goes. Chardon, when we talk about the honors program, certainly our community of listeners might be thinking, oh yeah, that's for those really smart students, and they take a couple extra classes, and they get some credit, some scholarship money, and so on, and then they just get, sort of push off into the next thing. Describe, if you will, for those that maybe are not incredibly familiar, and certainly what I just said is not really completely accurate. It's just the little, it's the basic thread that flies through it, but it's not everything. We might have some listeners like me who are products of the Honors Program here at Henry Ford Community College, at the time. Most of our Dearborn listeners or Dearborn residents, once they get through education in Dearborn. They like to stay in their community, and I think that's a wonderful thing. So we could be speaking to some honors students or some honors graduates right now. But exactly what does the title of "I'm an honor student at Henry Ford College" mean these days? And how do you think for our students beyond Henry Ford College that that's a benefit to have as that feather in their cap?
The name of the Henry Ford II Honors Program really carries a lot of weight, and I'm still learning that myself, just how lofty it is. But our students have gone on to do some wonderful things, and I would encourage your listeners to go on to our website, because there's a part on our website that has a space where there's a profile of many of our alumni, and I think we need to get Susan McGraw on there, because I
Oh,
don't think she's
well,
on that list. So
no, it's okay.
we're gonna make sure to rectify that very, post haste, as they say. But no, I mean it's a launching pad. I mean, yes, there are additional classes that honor students have to take. But that's just one piece of the pie. What I'm really trying to join into and continue to kind of put good energy, positive energy into, is a sense of community that we have in the Honors Program. I see students all the time kind of congregating in the hub, hanging out, enjoying themselves, just talking, playing, but also, of course, studying. And I think that sense of community, and I might go as far as to say they've created like a family atmosphere, and I think that's something that a lot of students want. We are a commuter college. We do not have any residential housing here, and so I think the Honors Program allows students who are part of it a place where they can feel like, I don't just have to come to class and go home. I have a home away from home here, someplace that I can, be, someplace that I mean that word be in all of the different senses, not just exist, but I can like kind of let my hair down, feel relaxed, feel comfortable. The Honors Program has some of the most dedicated faculty helping out, because we have not only faculty who are serving as instructors for our honors classes, we have faculty serving as directed study instructors, we have faculty who are serving as mentors. And so this is additional time that many of these, wonderful, wonderful faculty are giving of themselves to our students. And so the students are reaping the benefit of that. We just passed that millage, so I just have to say thank you to the thank you to the listeners. But this is that commitment that you're investing in when you vote like this. You're giving this to our students, and they get the benefit of this knowledge, this wisdom, this experience from very dedicated faculty. And so I think those are some of the things. Not to mention, I mean, I would be remiss if I didn't mention the opportunities to transfer. So, for instance, we have a seamless transfer from the Henry Ford Honors Program to the Wayne State University Honors Program. So, if a student completes the Honors Program at HFC, they can transfer into the Honors Program at Wayne State. And I did not mention that, but that's one of my goals as well, to create more of those seamless transfers, honors to honors transfers, because our students they're fantastic, they're amazing, and they deserve the opportunity to continue the journey that they start here at their next institution. So yes, there are classes that you have to take. Yes, you have to meet with your mentor, but you also gain the ability, and you have to work on your personal statement. You have to build up your resume. You have to, again, do some service, some community service, some volunteering. So These are things that are beyond the classroom that are going to help our students be holistically prepared for their next step.
We're hearing from Chardon Claiborne, who is the new director of the Henry Ford II Honors Program, and the opportunities that this program provides for our best and brightest here at Henry Ford College. Chardon bringing a wealth of experience and expertise in so many very focused areas, I think, of overall learning, sort of holistic learning, as co-faculty advisor to the Black Male and Queens Focus Group, faculty advisor to Phi Theta Kappa. I mean, all of these things just make perfect sense as it, you know, as we talk about your goals and interests in helping to sort of reshape this program. In your experience, Chardon, when we talk about setting up our students for success and sort of getting them into the next position, do you find that Henry Ford College students coming into the program or coming into the school in general are more of that mindset that they know exactly what they want to do and just need this next step to keep them moving forward? Or is it perhaps more, I just don't know what I want to do next, but I'm ready and I'm excited and I'm just willing to try some things. So what do you see more of, and what do you expect might be a response to both of those sort of opposite ends of preparedness for a student?
Yeah, I think it can be a mixed bag. But what I would say is, as a person who started his educational career and not really knowing what he wanted to do, I'm always impressed by the students who come in and they have a clear direction, a clear goal. They know exactly which way they want to go. What I think is, my wife and I, my lovely wife, Mignon, I'm going to say her name for the airwaves. We like to say it's just good to have options. It's good to have options. We like to say that to each other. And I think that's important for our students too. So whether a student comes in and they feel very concretely clear that this is the direction I'm going in, or maybe they're a little nebulous and they're like, oh, I'm not sure, they're kind of grasping. I think showing all of our students the various options that they have available to them is the best thing that we can do as professionals, as instructors, as counselors, advisors. I really believe that we in higher education don't always do the best job of telling students there are multiple ways and multiple paths for you to get to success. And success is going to be defined ultimately by the student and what they want to achieve and how they plan to get there. But I think in some ways, we make it this cookie cutter approach where you have to do A, B, C, 1, 2, 3, X, Y, Z. And it's not that there aren't requirements that all students have to meet. Yes, of course. But there's so many of us, as I started out our conversation mentioning how everyone is an individual. Everyone has a story. And so I think understanding that and helping students to understand that there are, just like getting the HFC, I know where I live. I live in Oakland County. There are multiple ways for me to get to Dearborn from where I live. There are multiple ways for a student to get to success from where they are today. And so I think showing them the options, showing them, helping them understand which school is going to be the best fit for them, helping them understand, what are your aptitudes, what are your likes, what are your dislikes, so if they understand what programs or what certificate, is going to be the best fit for them as a person and help them to succeed. We have to talk to them and we have to show them and we have to help them understand that no matter where you've been before, you can get to where you want to go. It may be a longer path sometimes. It won't be without its detours, its bumps in the road. You may have to pull over and, I'm torturing this metaphor, so I'm going to stop. But, you may have to pull over to the side and change your tire, but, you can get back on the road and get to your destination.
Speaking of different paths and all of those metaphors you just shared, and appropriately so. We are Henry Ford College, so we like the car metaphors. We certainly do. Is it true that maybe sometime down the road we're going to be able to start calling you Dr. Claiborne? Talk about geez, wearing a lot of hats. I understand that you are working, maybe it's early in the project, I don't know, but nothing like self-discovery and lifelong learning certainly seems to be a staple here in the honors concept. But working on educational leadership degree, yes. And how's
Yes,
it
yes,
going?
yes. If there was one gotcha question in this interview, I guess this is the one that you sprung on me, Susan. No, yes, I've been working on it. I've actually successfully completed all the requirements for my doctoral degree, with the exception of that one long paper that everyone has to complete. So I'm currently working on my dissertation. Matter of fact, today I have to send my advisor what my work product, as they say in the law field. So yeah, I'm working at it. Honestly, I had a little bit of a detour I set myself. My wife and I welcomed a new daughter into the world. She'll be 2 this June. So, that will definitely cause a pause in things. So
That's
I
more than a detour, I have to tell
think
you. That's a life change. That's a whole new, throw out that map and get the new one. But how wonderful, how exciting.
I'm trying to get back on course, while also not beating myself up too much. But I have the most respect for our students, because it helps me remember, because I know it, but it's a good reminder that everyone has things going on, and our students have multiple things. So it's not like they're just in this one class, or they're just students. They may have multiple family things and other engagements. And so, trying to complete a degree and be a working parent at the same time, and all the various and sundry parts that make up a life, I understand where our students are coming from, and it helps me be more empathetic. But yes, I'm working on it, with I can't believe I'm going to say this, but I guess I'm putting it out on the airwaves. The goal is by next May to be finished. Hopefully, that's my long goal. Hopefully before that, but now that I've said it on the airwaves, I'm really in trouble.
Now that you said it has to be true, right?
Yeah.
That's how it works. And that's why I asked you that question, just to get that for, no, I'm kidding. Actually, I did ask the question, in which you spoke to really beautifully, about how, yeah, we were all in a classroom at one point, for some of us, on the student side of things, and for some of us it's been a while, but for others of us in your situation, it is happening in the now, whether that's a literal classroom or a virtual classroom, et cetera. But I think we can all think back, whether from a long time ago or recent, that it is kind of scary. It's not easy, and there are all those pressures. And so you really spoke to that beautifully, which is why I asked that personal question. And thank you for addressing it. And best of luck with all of that, certainly. As a side note here, but I think as we wrap up today, it's important to always provide an opportunity for people to learn more. Our listeners are very smart, and they love connecting with things that are going successfully in our community. And certainly not just Henry Ford College itself, but Henry Ford College Honors Program is absolutely one of those successes that we here in this community need to be celebrating and be very, very proud of. But if we've got a parent or a grandparent of a current student or a prospective student, what do they need to know to learn more about a possible role as a member of the Honors Program?
Yes. Thank you for asking. So currently, and I want to share this with the listeners, as you stated, Currently, I am engaged in kind of a review and kind of a revision of our admissions kind of policies and practices. Historically, the honors program had a rolling admissions where applicants could submit applications at any point during the year. That is not how my mind works. I am definitely a person who works better when I have kind of timelines, deadlines, and I think for most people, you know, when you find something that is important, you schedule time for it, you know. And so I want the honors program here to also kind of adhere to that sort of ethos. And so right now, we're reviewing I am reviewing our application procedures, our processes, and I'm working with HFC's admissions department to help me with that. And so I expect that review to conclude by early April, maybe mid-April. And people will be able to go onto our website, and with any luck, if everything goes as planned, we'll be doing away with the paper and with the PDFs and things like that. And people will be able to actually go on to and fill out an electronic form to submit their application, you know, because we are in 2024 and that is how we should be able to do that. But in terms of like requirements, I expect those to stay very similar to what they are now, which are a 3.5 cumulative GPA. Right now we have an SAT score of 1260 or higher. And for current students at HFC, again, a 3.5 GPA and I believe we say 12 credits completed to be considered. And as I mentioned earlier, we are looking to expand that pool. So I'm expecting my goal is to enroll 90 to 100 students in the honors program. Let me reverse that. I want to have a total of 90 to 100 students. So that doesn't mean I'm going to enroll 90 or 100 new people. We have to take into consideration that some of our current students will be going into their second year in fall. So after we figure out how many of those students we will have, that will kind of set the benchmark for the number of students we can enroll, but that number should increase. And so I'm really excited about that. And I've already heard from a lot of counselors and instructors who have kind of been sending students my way. So yes, if you're interested, the most up-to-date information is on our website. So if you go to HFC and you just click in that search bar and you type in honors program, it's going to be the first result that comes up. So
That was going to be my next and final question. How can we learn more? So there it is. Simply the website, hfcc.edu, and search for honors. Chardon, if somebody wanted to talk to you directly, is there a link to an email just to you or a call, a phone number to you specifically?
Yes. So I'll give it over the airwaves, but it's also on the website. So I am C Claiborne, CClayborne at hfcc.edu. And that's the best way to reach me. But phone is 313-845-9818, 313-845-9818. And the information that I just provided is also on the Honors Program website.
Chardon Claiborne, Director of the HFC Honors Program, Henry Ford II Honors Program, as we call it. We congratulate you on your new position. Thanks for your time today. It's been a pleasure getting to hear more about what you're bringing into this program, goals, and the ideation that you've got behind them. And I'm sure you're going to be very successful, which leads to the success of our students, which is obviously our ultimate shared goal here at Henry Ford College. Thank you for your time and have a great day.
Thank you so much, Susan. I appreciate it. Thank you.
We've got more on the way. This is the WHFR Journal. Susan McGraw here. Please stay with us.
The impact of a meal goes well beyond feeding our bodies. Because when people don't have to worry about where their next meal is coming from, they can truly thrive, like Marta.
And now we'll hear from our class valedictorian. who with her hard work never ceases to amaze us. Please welcome Marta Moreno.
And Alex.
Hey, Alex, how did the interview go?
I did it. I got the job. I can't believe it.
I knew it. Let's meet up later to celebrate.
And Diego.
Mom, I got first place at the science fair with my volcano project.
That's amazing, sweetie. Congratulations.
Because when people are fed, futures are nourished, and everyone deserves to live a full life. Join the movement to end hunger at feedingamerica.org/act now. feedingamerica.org/act now. A public service announcement brought to you by Feeding America and the Ad Council.
Welcome back to the WHFR Journal. Susan McGraw here. One of the many traditions on this campus that involve bringing our community together through music and art and all of those wonderful things that are so important in life. Well, one of those things is coming up, and it's right around the corner. So we thought we would bring in the coordinator of this particular event, the head honcho, if you will, HFC Interim Director of Music, Anthony Lai, who is going to chat with us a little bit about the 29th President's Collage Concert. It's taking place Wednesday, March 20th, 7:30 at the Michael Guido Theater at the beautiful Ford Community and Performing Arts Center, where so many of our community activities and college activities take place, including commencement, by the way. But this is going to be a special night, as we know it always is. Anthony Lai, welcome to WHFR. Glad to have you here.
Thanks so much.
This is sort of an institution, the Collage Concert, and we call it the President's Collage Concert because it really is connected directly to celebrating the President's vision of the college. But the process of scheduling a show like this and coordinating and selecting musical pieces for a show like this, boy, what an undertaking that must be. I can only imagine. Yep. And I've heard a little bit of what, you know, how involved that is. But tell us a little bit about this experience. Correct me if I'm wrong, but is this your first official taking over of this event and actually coordinating it? Or was that kind of a part of what you did at the last concert as well?
I was involved to a degree, but much more as just one of the music directors rather than kind of putting it together. That was Kevin Dewey's last time kind of being in charge of it. There's a degree of shadowing to it, but it's crazy how you think you see the process until you have to do it yourself and you realize there's a mountain of work that you didn't even see. And just the level of pre-planning, you know, making sure every ensemble knows what pieces to select to be able to have ready earlier. In fact, this concert was going to be February 27th, and the president wanted to push it back because the millage that just passed. So thank you, listeners, if you help support, get that millage passed. But we pushed it to March 20th, which is actually helping all of our ensembles get just a few more rehearsals in, and things are sounding fantastic. The choirs are sounding great. The bands are cooking. So I'm really looking forward to it.
Tell us a little bit about what we would expect from a collage concert. The word collage, I think, says a lot. Mm-hmm. It speaks to the variety and the diversity that one would expect to experience. But what is your interpretation this year? What's your vision of that?
Yeah, the collage concert is our opportunity for the music department to showcase everything that we do. So all of our music ensembles all perform on the concert. Everyone gets about, you know, around 8 minutes each, and then we combine everybody at the end, do the school song that Kevin Dewey wrote, a beautiful, beautiful piece of music there, and then a combined song this year. It's Raise Your Voice from Sister Act 2. So all the bands get together, all the choirs get together to do the last one. But show is going to open with a medley of music from Star Trek by the Metropolitan Symphony Band. And then we'll have jazz fusion, funk, Latin, swing, contemporary classical music, gospel. It's an eclectic mix of just represents everything we do at the college. It's my favorite event that we do every year.
It really does sound like there's something for everybody. And music, while some of us think it's just universal, others are like, well, it's an acquired taste. I only like this. I only like that. But there, you won't be able to say you didn't find some format or some genre of music, unrepresented. I'm sure they're all going to be amazing. Tell us a little bit about the the amount of performers, the number of the people that are going to be singing and playing instruments and so on, because this sounds like it's lots and lots of people that are coming together.
Yeah, there's a lot on stage by the end. There's about 70 voices in Vanguard Voices, which is the Dearborn Community Choir that is choir in residence at the college, still directed by Kevin Dewey. And then our Henry Ford Chorus has about 30 singers. The Metropolitan Symphony Band is about 40 musicians. And then we have the two big bands, which are about 25 each band. So that comes to, I should have done the math as I tallied up, over 100 singers, over 100 performers on stage at once. So it's pretty cool. Yeah.
So I understand also that there will be a special performance from one of the recent theater events, Leo's Big Day Out, which was,
yes.
I was joking with Dr. John Michael Seffel, who put that piece together, that who directed that play. And I said, where can I get the soundtrack? Like our soundtrack, because it was just so well done. And how exciting that we're actually going to get a little experience of that. So tell us about that collaboration.
First of all, Dr. Seffel is fantastic. John Michael, excellent director, excellent human being. I loved working with him last semester. And that musical was just a little gem of a cute story of a kid that wants to just go out and experience the world. And the song that we're doing in the concert is the song sung by his pet cat when it gets out and they have to go find it. And when they find it, it's on top of a tree pretending it's a lion in the savannah, hunting for its prey. And it's just it's an adorable little song about what it would be like to be like my cousin, the lion. And Hannah Whitaker, the student who played that character, did such a fantastic job. So when we were trying to decide which song to do, it was pretty much a no-brainer. She just completely sold it on stage. So she's her prize performance we're looking forward to. And we're actually cooking up in the studio a little cast recording. So you will actually get a little soundtrack. I don't think it'll be for public release, but we'll certainly give you a copy.
That's fantastic. We are looking forward to this event. Tickets, as I'm reading on the release, $16 each, purchased at the Ford Community Performing Arts Center box office, I understand. And other ways to acquire tickets and reserve our spot?
Yes, if you know any of the performers and any of the groups, you can get discount tickets from them for $10. And of course, you can always email me at ajlai@hfcc.edu if you're interested in getting some of those discount tickets as well.
Easy enough. The concert starts on the 20th of March at 7:30 p.m. again at the Ford Community and Performing Arts Center, Michael Guido Theater. About how long of a night are we looking forward to, and you know, how do you think it's going to sort of wrap up at the end of the season?
Yeah, it shouldn't be more than an hour and a half. I'm trying to make sure we don't go too long. We got a lot of performers up there, but we've limited the time for each one, so we certainly won't go past an hour and a half. I'll be talking a little bit. We have several students that have to make it from the band up to the choir and then from the choir back down to the band. So, you know, have to kill a little bit of time between each tune, but it should be a pretty concise night, and it's going to flow. And looking at the set list, it just goes from excellent tune to excellent tune, and I'm really looking forward to the program. It seems pretty good.
Many of our listeners are probably very familiar with the President's Collage Concert, probably attending multiple times, but if it's your first time, boy, I can't think of a better way to experience what this concert means to our community here in Metro Detroit, Dearborn, but also to the community of performers, the community of student performers, musicians, singers, etc. You mentioned Kevin Dewey. You mentioned Dr. John Michael Seffel. Others that you're collaborating with this time around on the faculty side of things that you'd like to share?
Yes. If you've seen the collage before, then you definitely need to come, because we're introducing our new choir director for the Henry Ford Chorus, Amy Sari, who's done a fantastic job. She had, I think, somewhere in the ballpark of 15 singers last semester, and she managed to double the size of the choir in just one semester. So she's doing great work. They're sounding great. So it'll be the three directors will be me, Amy, and Kevin, but also we have a student-led vocal jazz group this time. So Anna Whitaker and Marcus Weeks, two of our one longtime singer of the vocal jazz group, Marcus, and then our current student, Hannah, are leading a HFC Music Club vocal jazz group. So they're going to do a performance as well. Really proud to see them stepping up and taking a leadership role. It's the first time we've had a student-led group on the collage concert. So we definitely have some newness happening. I hear that Steve Glazier is going to have some of his art students have displays in the gallery. And there'll be some promo flyers and whatnot if you're interested in seeing the Detroit Wall Project, John Michael Seffel's latest theater performance, which is going to open in April. I don't have that date on me, but we'll have promo for that as well. Yeah, I'd like to see this whole concert become a big calling card for all of the arts that we do at the college. So, yeah, if you come March 20th, you'll see a little bit of everything we do in that building over at McKenzie Fine Arts.
It really is a celebration of the arts. Anthony, we wish you a continued best of luck as you do the last minute touches, which I'm sure there are a zillion, but we know that this, as your first official directing of this project, is going to be amazing. And again, absolutely a little something for everyone. So March 20th, 7:30 p.m., that is a Wednesday evening at the Michael Guido Theater there on Michigan Avenue here in Dearborn. So much to look forward to. And if you'd like more information about tickets, et cetera, probably just best to go to that HFC website, I'm guessing.
Yes, or you can go to the Florida Community Performing Arts website as well.
Awesome. So hfcc.edu, and that's a good starting point, or certainly the center on Michigan Avenue in Dearborn. Anthony, we thank you for your time today. So excited about this event and this opportunity to bring the musical community together on stage and the community at large together in the audience. And we wish you all the best. Thanks for your time today.
Absolutely. Thank you so much.
We've got more on the way. Stay with us.
As veterans, we're no strangers to helping others.
It's what we were taught, trained, and told to do.
It could be for anything. Helping a friend move.
Listening to a fellow veteran for hours at any hour of the day.
Or just simply making time for people. A neighbor, a loved one, or even a stranger.
We're often the first to help others. There's no question about it.
But we do have one question for the veterans listening.
When is the last time you reached out for help?
Perhaps it's time to do for yourself what you would do for others.
If you or someone you know needs resources, whether it's for stress, finances, employment, or mental health, don't wait. Reach out.
Find more information at va.gov/reach. That's va.gov/reach.
Brought to you by the United States Department of Veterans Affairs and the Ad Council.
Thank you for being with us on this journal edition. We're going to wrap up today's show with a piece from a really neat series called A Good Day to Share. Emily Ladeau is the special guest, and she is a disability rights activist. She's going to talk about how to break down barriers. This is an ongoing series that has been created for Women's History Month, and we're going to air as many of these as we can. Do hope you enjoy this, and we thank you for tuning in to this week's WHFR Journal. Enjoy this 6-minute segment, and then moving on to Highway 61 and our own Kitty Love. Have a great day. A great week, and stay tuned.
What does it take to create an equal, just, and joyful world? And how do we sustain ourselves when the work is daunting? I'm Lauren Schiller, creator of Inflection Point and co-author of the new book, It's a Good Day to Change the World. We're bringing you a special segment every week of Women's History Month about how we can build a more feminist future and take care of yourself and each other along the way. Today, we hear from Emily Ladeau, a disability rights activist, about how to break down barriers. Emily has Larson syndrome, a rare genetic joint and muscle disorder she inherited from her mom, who has it too. Emily is on a mission to make progress for disability rights by sharing her own story and helping others do the same on their own terms. She's won a number of awards for her activism, and her first book is Demystifying Disability: What to Know, What to Say, and How to Be an Ally.
I am very, very passionate about storytelling, not really just my own story, but finding ways to amplify as many stories as I possibly can. I went to a summer camp for kids with disabilities. At the camp, they got a phone call and they said, "Hey, we're looking for kids to try out for a role on Sesame Street. Do you have anyone?" So I auditioned for the role and got the part. Following my time on Sesame Street, I would talk about my disability if I felt like the moment was right. But beyond that, the best thing you could possibly say to me was, oh, I forgot that you use a wheelchair, or I don't think of you as disabled. I just wanted to hide this very apparent thing about myself. It wasn't until college when I started to wake up to the fact that there was no reason for me to be trying to hide something that, first of all, I couldn't hide anyway, and second of all, I shouldn't have to hide. Midway through college, I had what I call a quarter-life crisis, where I just completely cracked, and I was like, I need to be a disability advocate. I don't know what that means, but I'm gonna do it. And my parents, being the beautiful humans that they are, were like, we have no idea what you're saying. We don't know how you're gonna make money, but we love you, so go for it. I'm just trying to do what I can in the hopes that be less afraid of saying the wrong thing or doing the wrong thing. And we'll just be able to show up as we are and hopefully learn better and then know better and then do better.
Here are some of Emily's tools to change the world. First up, seek small wins.
To combat ableism really begins by taking a look around the environments that you're in, asking what you're doing to make them inclusive and accessible, whether it is going to a shop that you frequent and saying, hey, it would be so great if you could put a ramp in, or if you are planning an event, ensuring that there's going to be captioning so everybody can understand what's being said. You know, when we begin to make these small changes and create environments that are more meaningfully inclusive, we can start to dismantle how pervasive ableism really is.
Next, destigmatize the word disability.
I try to caution people against the use of euphemisms like special needs or differently abled. That being said, if someone who has a disability chooses to use those terms for themselves, I respect that. But what it comes down to is really not being afraid of the word disability. It's not a bad word. It's a word. It describes who I am. And the only reason we see it as dehumanizing is because we've attached that connotation to it, which means that we also have the power to remove that.
And finally, how do we sustain ourselves when the work is daunting?
I used to keep a very odd sleep schedule, and I would always be waking up later and then rushing to all of my meetings for the day. And I finally realized if I can just wake up at the same time every single morning, give myself some time to eat something, to exercise, to move my body in a way that feels good, to start my day by putting myself first, that would really make a difference in the tone of my day. And I know I sound like some kind of women's health magazine or something. I don't mean to. I'm not one of those people, but it really has made a difference for me.
Find more of Emily Liddow's story, along with more trailblazers and their tools, in our new book, It's a Good Day to Change the World, based on Inflection Point interviews. You can find it wherever you get your books. Learn more about the book at inflectionpointradio.org. This series was produced in collaboration with KALW. Our executive producer is David Boyer. Our impact producer and my co-author is Hadley Dynack. I'm Lauren Schiller.
Please join WHFR on Friday from 2 p.m. until 4 p.m. as DJ Kitty Love brings 2 hours of the best in new blues releases and artists from the local Metro Detroit area to the 89.3 FM airwaves. Listen to all hues of blues during the Highway 61 cruise at Henry Ford College Radio, WHFR.FM.
Coming your way from the campus of Henry Ford College, this is WHFR Dearborn, featuring local and independent artists. Stay tuned for Highway 61.